You don't often leave his side, whether it's at a cabinet meeting or events, or obviously spending a lot of time with President Trump, in addition to having a big job at the Department of Interior leading the National Energy Council. Talk a little bit about how the president is engaged with you specifically and your mission now in the government.
Well, I think the intersection of the mission for Department of the Interior, which is so expansive, I mean, covering 14 time zones and all the land, the minerals, the offshore acres, the national parks, all of that, including lots of things around Washington, D.C., here, the National Mall, getting ready for the America 250 events next year. So there's plenty of intersections there. But, of course, in the role that you also mentioned, the second role, chair of the National Energy Dominance Council, is all about the stuff that Mac's coming on later to talk about, and I'm sure Governor Armstrong. But, you know, we need – there's no energy transition. It's energy addition. We need to add energy in this country, and that's something we're talking about every day. So then last night there was a bunch of business leaders from around the country, you know, everybody from, you know, Jamie Dimon to all the top Wall Street guys, the people that are building these big $100 billion infrastructure funds to build AI. So I had an opportunity to be at dinner last night at the White House with that group, with the president and a few of the other cabinet members, including Scott Bessent and Howard Lutnick. And the and then in the middle of the dinner, then Carol Levitt comes in and says, hey, they passed the bill. And President Trump says, who wants to go to the Oval Office and watch me sign the bill to reopen the government? So that was like a 10 or 10:30 p.m. last night. The guy works around the clock. It's quite amazing what he does. But it's a every day there's something positive happening and moving forward. And it's a it's an honor to be part of this administration and the great cabinet that he's assembled.
Unfortunately, the government shutdown was a a black mark. I, for the life of me, couldn't understand how Democrats who claim to care so deeply about the poorest among us and obviously love government. As Lindsey Graham told me, it it's more likely that an 800-pound man would pass up a donut, just kind of like the Democrats and government. Yet they shut it down. How much of a disruptor, just from your perspective in the agency, was the last 40 days?
Well, it's just it's just unbelievable to me. I mean, you know, first of all, Scott, you know, China didn't take, you know, the last 43 days off. I mean, they're just charging ahead. We're in this AI arms race with them. I mean, they opened 93 coal plants last year, 93, like 1 gigawatt each. I mean, each one as big as Coal Creek in North Dakota, you know, that's enough to power Denver. So they're just charging ahead, full speed ahead on all this stuff. And then we're taking 43 days off for what? For, political gamesmanship. I mean, this was literally, it was like, let's shut down government. We're the Democrats. Let's shut down the government and see if we can blame it on the other guys, even though we're the ones that are shutting it down. And not only did it, hurt the poorest among us with food benefits and other, I mean, think if you're running a small business in a gateway community to a national park, and we're spending tens of millions of dollars trying to keep the parks open, but we're not collecting any revenue. In the interior, we collect revenue, and we're losing revenue all over the map during this thing. I mean, it's just like this should just go away. Neither party should be able to shut the government down when you're and just have a tantrum over it. It's like, this doesn't make any sense. I mean, no common sense. No American would shut down their business for 43 days and expect to have a good result coming out the back end of that.
Yeah, no kidding. I know the president is long on making the rules different in the U.S. Senate. I was just doing a little history lesson yesterday, and the filibuster was not the vision of the founding fathers. A simple majority was. That's why they put the vice president in there to be the tiebreaker. What's your position on whether or not we should, cheerlead, because the Senate would have to determine their own rules, but should they change the rules so that you can't stop legislation and have the 60-vote margin to proceed?
Well, I think President Trump is clear-eyed about this, which is the Democrats would have already made it go away. Last time they had a slim majority, but, Joe Manchin stood in the way of that happening. And if they're back in the majority in the Senate, they'll make it go away the next time. And when they do, I mean, who knows? The next thing we'll have D.C. and Puerto Rico will be states. We'll have four more senators. They'll stack the Supreme Court. President Trump knows that if the filibuster went away, we could pass 100 bills between now and midterms that would improve the lives of and the future successes of American citizens. We could have all kinds of positive legislation to keep the momentum going and get our economy really rolling. Do that, and if we don't pass the filibuster, if we don't get rid of the filibuster, I mean, they may pass zero bills between now and midterms, because they're going to not. I mean, they were trying to block the progress of government by shutting it down. It's not like they're going to go to work and try to make it work more efficiently when they come back. So President Trump's got a great point on that thing, and I hope the Senate gives it serious consideration and, you know, get rid of the filibuster and let's get going, pass some great legislation.
You mentioned America 250 and all the events leading up to the celebration July 4th, 2026, which are just breathtaking in many ways. My favorite, as I'm sure it is yours, is the official America 250 event for the opening of the Teddy Roosevelt Presidential Library. Bring us inside the planning there and what you expect to happen over those few days.
Well, as I said at the top here, in Department of Interior, because we've got the National Mall, we Statue of Liberty is a National Historic Site property, Independence Hall in Philadelphia, everything here in D.C. We're deeply involved in the America 250 celebration and planning it. And as you just said right there, look, we've got East Coast, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., all these historic locations here. But one of the great events in the heartland of America is going to be the opening of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library. That is going to be something that no one's going to want to miss. And what a project that is, Scott. You've been deeply involved in it, supporting it, encouraging it, and educating people about it. But this isn't just a museum, and it's definitely not a library. This is a high-tech location where people are going to get a chance to learn about not only just the life of Theodore Roosevelt and his impact on citizenship and leadership and conservation, but what it means to the nation going forward. Just like the Reagan Library is to defense, Reagan Library today is an institution that influences the direction of this country. The Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library is going to be an institution which is going to have far wide-ranging impacts on where this country is going in the future. And it's, you know, happening right here in North Dakota, and a spectacular thing. And this is the most magnificent project ever done by a private foundation at any entrance to any of our 63 flagship parks. It's going to be a model for how parks can interact with the private sector going forward. And we expect it to be, you know, one of the most visited presidential libraries in America.
And I just hope folks can see it. My quest is for more North Dakotans to grasp this and how their legacy can be tied to TR's legacy. The support for this internationally has been amazing in honoring Teddy's legacy. I hope more North Dakotans will step up and do this. And what's been fun to watch is just the vision come to life and this come out of the Badlands. And also, in a typical North Dakota way, doing it in a very spendthrift way. I saw the Obama Library is now over budget by I forget what, but three times the cost of the Teddy Roosevelt Library, now at like $1.3 or $1.4 billion. And it looks like a grain bin. It's just incredible. So kudos to you and the whole team on the whole vision here. It's just been breathtaking to watch it come to life.
Well, it's going to be an exciting day, and we know that there's going to be special VIP visitors coming from literally around the world. Theodore Roosevelt wasn't just a great American president. He's like President Trump. He was literally known around the world. And it is when I had an opportunity, I was traveling on energy business Eastern Europe, Central Europe, and the Middle East for 6 days last week, you know, meeting with energy ministers, trying to sell more U.S. energy to our friends and allies so they can stop buying it from our adversaries like Iran and Russia. And, you know, if TR comes up in any of those circles, they all know who he is. And of course, incredible, the legacy of his family. You know, his son landed at D-Day and was a general, the oldest person coming ashore at D-Day on Normandy. He's buried at there at a cemetery, and then he's had a younger son that died almost 25 years earlier in World War I as a pilot. So he's got two sons buried next to each other. So, you know, TR's legacy of sacrifice and service carried on through his family. TR-4, who's been out to the site in North Dakota, Navy SEAL, Theodore Roosevelt V, involved in the project. There's now a Theodore Roosevelt sixth who's about 10, 11 years old. He's going to be there. So the Roosevelt family squarely behind this thing as well, which has been fantastic. Because when you build a presidential library for someone that is no longer alive, you need the blessing of the family, and to have the full support of the Roosevelt family as part of this thing and their legacy is really something. That's the only father. There's only two father-son Medal of Honor combinations in American history, and it's the MacArthurs and the Roosevelts, because, of course, T.R., only president to win a Medal of Honor for his valor on his famous charge up San Juan Hill in the Spanish-American War. But that and so many other stories that we're looking forward to. And I'll leave it at teaser, since we're still the Bison are having a great season. But when you come to the Presidential Library, you're going to find out a story you probably haven't heard, how Theodore Roosevelt saved American football. There'll be that and many more. And I've had a chance even to talk to Roger Goodell about that, the NFL commissioner. And he understands exactly that story. And so he's the kind of person that's probably going to want to be at the opening to help celebrate Theodore Roosevelt's incredible role in creating and saving that sport that we all love so much.
I love it. I want to ask you a little bit about the arms race on AI, but before I do, you mentioned VIPs coming to Medora for that event. Tradition holds that every living president is there. Do you expect that to be the same for the opening in Medora?
Well, they're all going to be invited, and they're going to have plenty of options to come over that opening season. And the grand opening itself, I think, is scheduled to run July 1 through July 5th over 5 days. It is an official America 250 event, so there is going to be the America 250 committee is going to be a part of this thing and highlighting this. So lots of moving parts, lots of excitement, but all living presidents will be invited. It'll be interesting to see who comes, when they come, as that all of that unfolds. But it's going to really put a spotlight on North Dakota and really the West in general, because we can't celebrate America's 250 years with just going back 250 years to the earliest days of the founding fathers. The opening up of the West, the creation of the national park system, the farmers, the ranchers, the miners, the foresters, the timber people that helped develop the West, and all the great resources. That's a great part of our history as well. And what a place to be telling that from in North Dakota, because Theodore Roosevelt, created the U.S. Fish and Wildlife system. He was instrumental in growing the national park system, instrumental in putting away hundreds of millions of acres of land filled with mineral resources so that we could be an energy powerhouse. And so it's just you can't separate America's history without talking about Theodore Roosevelt. It's impossible to separate the two. And we know that that our president is excited about, President Trump is excited about this opening as well. And so we'll people just have to stay tuned as we think about how that special visitor might make his way to North Dakota.
Yeah, no kidding. By the way, we have a North Dakotan raising the flagpole. Jim, the flagpole guy, is going to join us later today for that ceremony, which is going to be amazing. By the way, we have Brian Kilmeade coming this weekend. He's written a book about Teddy Roosevelt. Brett Baer just wrote a new one. Teddy lives, and he's really going to live at that library, so super exciting. Let me ask you a little bit about the AI arms race. The one great thing about North Dakota, as you know, having led it for 8 years as governor, is the sense of patriotism. And I've really been talking about this a lot, because there's some consternation about AI as a technology and about the land use and power rates and all these things among North Dakotans. And I always start with the fact this is an opportunity for North Dakota to be at the tip of the spear in the most important battle of our lifetime. That is, we win, China loses. Talk a little bit about what you see North Dakota, your home state, playing in a role of this revolution that's coming.
Well, great question, Scott. I would say that that in every culture across the span of history, there's been some kind of phrase in every language that translates to knowledge is power. People always understood the more you knew, the more power you could, we'd accumulate. So knowledge is power. But today it's actually flipped to some degree, because power is knowledge. I mean, this is the first time in human history that we've been able to take electricity and convert a kilowatt electricity directly into intelligence. So I think about these not as data centers. I mean, a data center where, say, you're processing a Blue Cross, healthcare claim. Yeah, it's important. You got a payer, you got a provider, you have a patient, you got to get it all sorted, get that transaction run through a big data center. Or if it's a online shopping data center, a customer, maybe a third party in the company that's running the shopping site. But those are all closed loop to sort of benefit that customer. It's like a company. It's like internal IT. But when we think about the future, when we're manufacturing intelligence, and then that intelligence is, as they say, GPT, general purpose technology, it can be applied to anything. I mean, we can use that technology to make our universities better, make our K-12, get an individualized tutor for every student in the state of North Dakota, speed up ag research, cure cancer, use it for defense systems. I mean, this is literally, we're in an AI arms race with China, and China is adding power at an unbelievable rate. And they're just, they're just charging ahead. We're not in an energy transition. That was part of the Green New Scam, was that somehow you could add intermittent, weather-dependent, highly subsidized forms of electricity and shut down baseload power, like from, beautiful clean coal in North Dakota. And then somehow that was going to work out. So we were actually going backwards when China was going forwards in terms of power generation, and you need power to win the AI arms race. So how does North Dakota benefit? Well, we know that there's an entire industrial protest complex. We saw it firsthand in North Dakota with the Dakota Access Pipeline protests and the paid protesters and the organizations that came in to fight linear infrastructure. I mean, if those groups existed, we would have never had the Transcontinental Railroad. We wouldn't have the interstate highway system. But now, where we've got stranded power, stranded gas, like in North Dakota in the Bakken, these data center intelligence factories are coming to places where they can get the power, take the power, turn it into electricity, put the data center right there, and then you ship out your final product on a fiber optic cable. There's no protest, there's no permitting. I mean, you run the fiber optic cable down a route that is, next to the interstate or something, and at least the professional protesters haven't figured out a way to protest a fiber optic cable yet. We'll keep our fingers crossed, Scott. But this is a boon for North Dakota, because if you're going to have a manufacturing plant in the future, it's going to have advanced capabilities like robotics, intelligence, precision cutting, computerized tools. I mean, this isn't any factory today. All those factories that are actually building stuff need more power. And our universities, for the research, they're going to need more power. And North Dakota is situated so well. We're an exporter of electricity. Minnesota has passed laws at times saying they don't want our electricity. Great. Use it all in North Dakota. We've got all kinds of opportunities to continue to build, build out capability, build out things that will advance America, help support our missile defense system across, help our Air Force bases in Minot and Grand Forks. I mean, the positives go on and on and on. This is a golden opportunity for North Dakota to grab this opportunity. We have the energy, we have the talent, we have the capability, and we've got what we need. And guess what? Everyone complains about the cold. The colder temperatures reduce the operating costs of a intelligence factory because of the heat generated from the chips. They have to cool that down. You can save about 30% of your operating costs building the same size AI factory in North Dakota as you would if you're building it south of Phoenix. And so big advantages for our state, if we can remain a pro-business state. And then people say, I'm worried about electrical rates. There's ways to do this where the power rates actually go down for the local citizens, because the hyperscalers that are building these they'll build more power, energy addition, build more power, put some of that power on the grid, keep most of it off running the data center. So it's net add for the people locally. And then the property tax revenue that can come from these things would be game changing for some rural counties. I mean, these things will be the biggest revenue boom for rural counties, new schools, all the things that we saw from the Bakken boom, all the positives that came from that can also come to North Dakota from this AI capital spending boom. And you know who's not going to benefit from it? States that have high electric prices and are anti-energy. I in this job that I'm in right now, Scott, every day I'm talking to someone who's building a, $5 billion, $10 billion data center. None of them are looking at New York or California because they don't want to go someplace that is literally outlawing electricity with a bunch of highly regulatory state laws and a set of rules that, that make it impossible to do business. So we're going to see a bifurcation. Capital is going to flow to states like North Dakota, and it's going to flow away from states that are effectively have got anti-energy policies, just like the Biden administration did.
No wonder Kevin O'Leary likes it so much here.
Last question for you, Doug, related to the speed necessary to get in front of this. There's a company out there called Armada that has come up with great innovation. I love that about this whole industry, where they have mobile data centers, basically, at 1.5 megawatts each, can build a bunch of these, get them here within 6 months, get them to the source of the power. They're energy agnostic. And seems to me this is the key issue here, the speed at which. I know North Dakota's got this pipeline coming west to east. Won't cut the ribbon on it until 2029. Is that fast enough?
Not fast enough. We have to figure out a way to go faster, but like Armada, the company you mentioned, Caruso, there's others that are like coming to North Dakota and saying, look, hey, even if we got flare gas coming off of the thing, let's grab that flare gas. Let's convert it to electricity right on site. Let's use it to have a mobile or portable data center right here to start garnering that electricity. We got to grab power wherever we can, turn it into intelligence. It's something there's going to be very high demand for. I love the innovation that's occurring across all these things. There's some very exciting things coming, and then it's AI for energy and energy for AI. We talk about adding more energy for AI, but when we generate the AI, we can use the AI to optimize the grid. We can use it to optimize every gas and coal plant, and we can potentially squeeze 10, 20, 30% more production out of what we already have. Using AI for optimization of what we're doing. So very exciting future. And, of course, under President Trump, with these economic policies, we set record oil production. Record oil production in July. We're going to break it again this winter. Energy prices are coming down. Walmart, Thanksgiving prices. The whole bundle of things you need for Thanksgiving at Walmart, 25% below it was a year ago. President Trump said he's going to make America affordable again. He's doing that. And then we're the largest LNG exporter. This is the week a year ago President Trump got elected. A year ago, Biden had an export ban on LNG, construction ban for LNG export facilities. Just getting back from this trip to Europe, we're displacing, we're taking market share every day away from the Russians. The way you want to know how you end a war? Wars end when people run out of money. President Trump, who solved 8 conflicts around the world, the peace president, he's going to get this war ended in Russia, and we're going to do it because we're going to be selling energy to our friends and allies so they don't have to buy it from our adversaries. And over there, the record amounts of LNG flowing into Europe from the U.S., we were there, got some more deals signed last week, first long-term contracts even into Central and Eastern Europe, where they want to no longer be dependent on Russia for their thing. All of that is great. Great for North Dakota, great for America, great for world peace, great for prosperity at home. Exciting time for this country, for sure.